If you're looking for something to do this May 30th through June 2nd, why don't you join us at CrimeCon in Nashville, Tennessee? We can all rub elbows with people like John Walsh, John Douglas, and Chris Hansen. Come and visit Murder in the Rain on Podcast Row, where we'll be sitting next to some of our own favorite podcasts. You can get 10% off your tickets by using code RAIN at checkout at crimecon.com.
This is Murder in the Rain, where each week Emily Rowney, Alicia Holland, and Josh McCullough tell true crime stories of the Pacific Northwest. Murder in the Rain contains graphic content. Listener discretion is advised. Five years ago, a little show premiered that has changed everything for everyone everywhere. Okay, that might be slightly hyperbolic, but the show has changed our lives, and that show is Murder in the Rain. Today, we are celebrating 5 years of shows with questions from you, the listeners, stories from us, the hosts, and some funny stuff in between. Before we get to the questions from listeners, let's lay out some history of who we are and how we got here. So let's start with Emily.
That's me.
Emily Rowney. Can you tell us about yourself, where you're from, where your interest in true crime originated?
Well, sure. So as you know, I'm Emily. Some people call me M. I go by M at my day job. I am from Corvallis, Oregon. It's a little town in the valley of Oregon. Born and raised. I popped up to Portland for a couple of years when I went to community college, met some of my current best friends, went back to Oregon State and came back up here years later. Let's see. Who am I?
What am I? What is the meaning of life?
I think you could summarize me in a few shows that I'm obsessed with to this day. Unsolved Mysteries is where my interest in true crime began. I think back on that. And so I was about 8. My mom stopped making me go to the babysitter. I would be like, Mom, I'm fine. I can watch myself. She was a bartender on Friday and Saturday nights. And I just wanted to be alone to watch my Unsolved Mysteries.
Is that so much for an 8-year-old to ask?
I mean, come on. Occasionally, her friend Margaret would come over and watch it with me. And I didn't mind Margaret. She was cool. She'd watch Tales from the Crypt with me and everything. But I preferred, you know, my alone time with HBO and other channels. But I fancied myself a detective. And I thought, one of these days, I'm going to solve one of these cases I see on here. So I was very diligent about what people looked like, anyone that they was wanted, like what they looked like, what their crimes were, because I thought, surely, one day I would call in a tip. So that's where it all began. My mom is also quite obsessive with true crime books. She had a run-in with a serial killer as a teenager and was, you know, cutting out newspaper clippings, have books on, she had Green River Killer books all over the house. So I think it was just kind of a natural progression for me.
Thank you for sharing. Joshua McCullough.
I think Beetlejuice started my obsession with death a little bit, but let me go back. I'm Josh. I'm a 44-year-old male from Burbank, California.
Come on down.
Thank you for doing an intro like you're on Love Connection.
Well, that's what I'm doing.
Can we actually
do that? We'll be back in two and two.
Let's make video versions for Patreon.
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
The typewriter sound and everything?
Yes. I am really.
And we'll turn to the camera.
This could be a great TikTok video as well. I mean, while it lasts.
Yeah.
TikTok?
Yeah.
Oh, is it going away?
Oh,
no.
I hope not. They're trying to find a buyer.
It won't go through.
It's just the government trying to control us in yet another way because they cannot. Wow, I sound like
me.
What are the people? What do they call them? Sovereign citizens? I sound crazy.
It's pretty cool. How'd we get here?
And that is
essentially
me. In a nutshell.
Yes, you're starting to talk and we totally ignore it and we talk about something else completely. And that's why you're a quiet, shy boy. Joshua Michael
McCullough. No. That was my answer. Next question, please.
Where did your interest in true crime? You said Beetlejuice was an early creepy movie. Did that lean into true crime at some point?
Unsolved Mysteries, for sure. I feel like I watched a lot of mysteries like Murder, She Wrote with my grandma.
Oh, yeah.
And then, I mean, I was young, but I was 10 when I saw Silence of the Lambs for the first time. I saw it in the theater with my mom. And that, before we started recording, I was realizing that that was probably a big one.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I've read a bunch of crime books. I love horror, and those two worlds intersect quite a lot for me in my interests. So is that an answer?
That's a great answer.
Cool.
I'll also answer. Hello, my name is Alicia, and I am an outside of Portland native. I grew up here and then lived in Las Vegas for a handful of years.
And she loved it there.
Oh, I loved it.
I'll tell you what.
Thriving. I grew up with a grandmother who really loved old crime novels and all those old TV shows, Perry Mason and all of that, and Twilight Zone, and that led into Alfred Hitchcock. And then as I started to get a little older, middle school especially, some childhood trauma led to comfort in Falling Asleep to Rescue 911, and then eventually Forensic Files, because I was going to be in forensics. And then I realized it took a lot of school, and I was like, not so much. And yeah, all of that led to that.
I didn't say that part, that it was because of childhood sadness that I was drawn
well,
to
you know.
And
I know it's
alone,
a given,
being
but
alone a
being
lot
alone
too.
A lot.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we have that in common. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
I mean, Alicia, you and I were only children for quite a while,
yeah,
until our brothers were born.
Yeah, we were lonely kids, yeah. New York lonely boys.
I didn't really touch on the whole school aspect. I had a similar, not necessarily specific to forensics, but I wanted to be a medical examiner. Mm. I had my life planned out. Then I met a boy like that, you know, it derailed my plans.
Age old story.
It's a tale as old as time. But, you know, that interests me still. And I love reading about the science behind some of those techniques. So
we did that My Life in a Book ad, and they gave us access to some of their questions. And one of them is first memory. And I'd really been thinking about that a lot.
Mm.
And I really think my first memory that I can pinpoint time, place, location, people is when my mom dropped me off at preschool, and I think I was 4, and I remember waving out the window, and then later a guy came in and robbed it at gunpoint. And so
really?
Like that's really one of my very first memories. So I think that says a lot about my foundation.
Well,
what we're dealing with.
My first memory comes back a lot. I have a long memory, and it was probably not even 1 year old, but it wasn't that. It was not dramatic. It was me being pissed that I had to take a nap, and so I was causing a ruckus in my room.
That sounds about right.
Still the same gal.
So since we're talking about the show, and we'll get into more about the history of how it all started, I'm curious. This is my question from the audience, me being the audience. When this all began 5 years ago, you know, we met in January of 2019, and then the show launched in April. What were you guys most worried about or maybe fearful of before or right at the beginning?
Consistency, that we wouldn't be able to stick to it.
Mm.
I thought that it...
Well, that's a fair concern.
Because so many podcasts just fall apart
after
a few episodes. It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
That I worried that would happen. But after our first recording, I didn't.
You know, that's funny. I was talking on a date the other night.
Oh.
And he said he listened to a podcast that mentioned most podcasts don't make it past their first episode, mm-hmm, the vast majority, and then definitely don't make it past 4. So it's like once you've made it past that, you're in kind of an elite group.
Right.
Whether you're good or bad.
Right.
But,
yeah, exactly.
For me, it was group dynamics. I wasn't sure if we would work as a group. I didn't know Josh at all.
Right.
You know, we've been friends for years, but we're very different.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure. Ended up, I think, benefiting us. It works
I
really
agree.
Well.
I agree.
But that was definitely something I was nervous about.
Mm-hmm.
If, like, one of us really loving it and someone hating it. Or...
Yeah. Or someone digging their heels in on something. That,
exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think those were legitimate. I definitely, my personal concern, which I'm still working on, but I would say I'm like 300% better on, is just the criticism. Just critical reviews and that kind of thing. But now that I realize
it,
now that I recognize where they're coming from, which is almost always racist white men, it doesn't sting as much.
Oh boy.
Well, it's true. Just saying, it's not as scary. I didn't want to upset people that mattered about the story. If they knew the story or knew the people or that kind of thing.
Well,
I was scared of.
I think we still have that fear, is you want it's different now, but yeah, it's more about the families and the survivors and yeah. making sure we're accurate and just doing our absolute best.
Yeah, it's a different fear. It's not a fear of, am I capable of? It's a fear of, I just want to make sure that this is received right and that I did everything possible correct, sure. which we always have. So I think that's not as much of a fear anymore. All right, I'm going to kick off the Q&A portion by answering Stacey S's question, which was, did y'all know each other before we started the pod? So we get this one a lot of basically, how did this come to be? Like you said, and we've got quite the dynamic. So way back in the day, 20-something years ago, we were at a party. I believe it was a theater, after theater
party. It
was
a cast party for Jesus Christ Superstar. My roommate was in it with your best friend.
That's right.
I did not know you. I did not know her. But my roommate said, come to this party with me.
And then when she saw my black eye makeup, she's like, that girl's on drugs.
Okay, listen here. I was on the couch flirting with the star of Jesus Christ Superstar, Jesus Christ.
What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening.
Who my best friend was in love with.
But I didn't know that. I didn't know her. I didn't know she liked him. All I know is he was like somewhat good looking and was interested in flirting with me. And so we were like cuddling on the couch and this bitch comes stomping in. Looks me dead in the eye with her piercing blue eyes and rubbed off eyeliner and is like, who are you? And I'm like, bitch, who knew we would become such friends only months later? Because my other roommate did children's theater with you guys. And I don't know. I don't know.
Right, okay.
I don't think you became friends, but I ended up being in a play with your best friend. And
we
hit it off. We played opposite lead roles. And we bonded over someone we both disliked, and the rest is history.
Usually that's all it takes. Somehow through all that, yes, we became friends through all of the years.
We spent that whole summer together.
Oh, yeah. We have road tripped together. We've been through a lot.
She's seen more of me than she ever needed to.
Not true, girl. I put my headphones on. I put my sunglasses on. And I look straight ahead because that ain't my business. Okay?
What, were you stinking up the back of a Ford Taurus or something?
That's right. When we all shared a bed in Roswell, New Mexico.
Oh, boy. We don't need to get into
anyway, that. So about 5 years ago, I think that January, we were making your drive that you were making at the time. And we're on another road trip. And
I actually think it was that, wasn't it? Were we going there?
Okay, because it was short. We weren't like going anywhere.
I thought we were going to
Boise.
Yeah,
remember? Because Indy got the chips.
Oh, my God. My dog got, it was Cheez-Its, I think, or something, and he got the thing stuck on his head, and it was the funniest thing we've ever seen.
Indy was my boyfriend dog. Like, in a past life, he was human, and we were lovers forever.
That is the creepiest thing you've ever seen.
And then he became a dog, and it was like, oh, my soulmate, hello. Yeah, and then we went into the convenience store, and was it Chloe, maybe? And she's like, Indy! And points out the window. We go running out, and he's got his head, and he's gobbling them as we're taking them. He's like, hey, hey.
He's like, finally, I'm alone. And you guys, my dog had serious allergies to everything, and I'm like, no, he's going to itch for days.
So on that trip, when we lost the Cheez-Its, Emily was like, hey, I know you're not super into it, but there's all these true crime podcasts that I really love listening to. Could we listen to them? I'm like, oh, yeah, sure. Throw it on. So she puts on one of the podcasts and we're listening. But then, of course, we get to talking and kind of doing what I think a lot of people do, which is like, well, you know, we could do that.
Well, you know, we had a lot in common, too, with the shows that we watched.
Mm-hmm.
We were really into I Shouldn't Be Alive, I Survive.
Yeah, for how much we don't have in common, we have as much in common.
And it's weird how long it took us to realize that we liked those things.
Well, yeah, we were always drawn to each other because of it. And so we listened to it, and then we were talking about the Pacific Northwest and all of the murderers and why is it, and, you know, the weather, the trees, the water, the I-5. And then what if we did something where we took people, and this was obviously before conversations about ethical true crime and certainly before I had any kind of understanding of that. And so we were saying, oh, what if we had a party bus and we could tour people around and this is this place and this is that place, and jokingly said, well, how would we get people to go to know about this party bus? We'd have to have a podcast. Ha ha ha. And then kind of a light bulb betwixt the two of us went off. We're like,
at that point, I had always wanted one. I had gotten into podcasts in when Serial came out, and I listened to all the major true crime podcasts at the time, and I definitely thought I could do it. I just didn't have anyone I could do it with.
Right.
And then when you showed interest, I was all in.
In 2013, was unfortunately dating a very horrible person, but that person was working with Josh and knew him and was doing podcasts.
Not to name names.
I won't name names, but worth it. Worth it for Josh. And so then I had met Josh through other podcasts. And then through the decade, we would run into each other all the time at movies and other events around town.
Who knew you'd have such a future together?
I know, right? And so I'd always say hi, and he's a quiet, shy boy. So I always thought he was like, oh, God, here's
this
girl
bitch,
again.
This drug yeah. with eyeliner.
Exactly. I always thought it was kind of a, yes, I see you. Please don't come closer.
And I thought, I was so nervous all the time because I thought Alicia was the coolest person I'd ever met. Honestly.
Gag me with a spoon.
But
no.
That's not true. No. She's just a big old dork like I am. And I didn't know that. I thought it was because of how many friends you had and how social you were. Mm. It scared the crap out of me.
It's intimidating.
It was. I was like,
especially for men.
How does someone have that many friends? How do they
do
that much stuff?
It's not possible.
Yeah.
We were lucky enough to work on stuff. We did several different podcasts together. So when this moment of let's do a podcast, I was like, wait a minute.
I know
somebody. And so I texted Josh, said, would this interest you at all? He was like, hell yeah.
And then she literally did a group chat.
Yep. Was like, hey, guys.
And we got to business quick. We picked a day to meet and we started laying out the framework.
Yeah, we met that January and it all fell together. We came up with the name that day. We came up with
format.
Yeah, just we all knew right away victims would be of most importance. Being accurate and researching a ton would be important. Not bantering a ton, you know, with exceptions like this.
Well, yeah, we
just
discussed putting it at the end.
Yeah, we just really, it all fit. It all made sense.
It
so,
did.
And then we picked a launch date and boom, there it was.
I mean, a whole lot more goes into it for those interested.
A lot more.
But that's the basic gist.
So when we started out, I think one of the biggest changes, when we started, we were doing episodes every other week. So I want to ask you guys, besides moving to weekly episodes, what would you guys say has changed the most in the last 5 years of the show?
Dang, our quality of episodes, I think. Our writing, like, that's probably what I mean by quality.
Mm-hmm.
The writing is more concise. We have a swing into how we do it, so it just comes a little bit more naturally now. But I can tell a major difference.
Mm-hmm. Josh, what would you say?
Yeah, definitely the writing. The sound quality has improved.
Mm. Thanks to our Patreon listeners.
I think that over time, our reach has expanded a bit. And so now you're getting to talk to, interact with, and assist people like Danielle and Tiffany.
Mm-hmm.
So that's amazing. I think that's one of the coolest
things.
That's
been
the
best part, for sure.
Yeah, the connections that we have who can put us in contact with families, detectives we know. I mean, it's been very cool to see how that's happened organically over time.
When you write every week for 5 years,
it just naturally gets better.
It's just going to get better. And I feel for all of us, just our delivery, which is why for some people, we end up with less bloopers on some episodes because we've just gotten better. I know I've been working on my attitude towards it so I don't beat myself up so hard. I don't get so frustrated. Like, I recognize, if I'm having an off day, you guys aren't going to be pissed. So I don't need to get worked up about it.
That was, I think, the hardest part in the beginning is we'd get so frustrated. I think there were more than one recording session. I know Josh did it. I know I did it, where we just had to stop and record another
day. I've had a couple, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big baby.
And it's because we're hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
Like, we don't care.
Right.
Unless I'm on a timeline and tell you I have to be out of here at a
certain
time.
Yeah, I've never thought something negative of either of
you
just because you were struggling.
We
I just go, oh,
days.
God, I've been there. I'm so sorry. That really sucks.
But I have a totally different attitude to it now. And I think it's the comfort level. When I mess up, I think it's funny.
Right.
But it happens less and less. You're right.
Yeah.
Remember that great compliment you gave me the other day?
Which one?
When you said that it was easy to edit my episode. It was the greatest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, yeah. No, your edits are great.
I love it. Now that is growth right there.
Yes.
Because in the beginning, whoo, doggy. We could have had 5 years of bloopers.
That's another thing, too. I do the first round of edits now. So that's really helped with how I hear myself or how I hear certain breaks or just having that skill set. I didn't know that before. I didn't know how to use GarageBand at all. And Josh walked me through it and is always helping me get better and better. So just the skill set of everything. So this leads me to more listener questions that they all go together pretty well. So Rosa Martinez asked, if you weren't doing this, what would you be doing? That's not what she asked. I'll ask again.
Well, probably just my day job. I've always been one to have a hobby, though. I constantly have something. So whether it's guitar lessons, I was into that for a while, or crafting. Remember my infinity scarf phase?
Oh, yes.
Selling stuff on Etsy.
Yeah. Is that like tiny Etsy?
Etsy. It's Etsy. No, I probably would be more focused on just my career, but I always feel like I'm doing something. And I like to write in my personal life, and I have a big goal to write a young adult book. So maybe I'd be spending my time on that.
Josh?
I think I'd be dead. But other than that,
can
you
elaborate?
A little heavy.
I think that if I hadn't started doing this, I don't know that I would have had the sort of personal turnarounds that I've had.
That's true.
And I might not have had the thing happen that made me find out that I had a thing. And then I would have just dropped dead. We would have been I don't even know. I'm toiling somewhere and I drop to death.
You never know, though. You might have had a different path that brought that to your attention. But you're right.
As a hero.
Looking at it, it's seeing us all the time.
Mm-hmm. It helps.
We saved your life.
Yeah, I don't know what I would be doing. Probably something I didn't like I was doing before and then before that. So,
yeah,
I think I might have been working in this field either way, but definitely not.
Maybe not on a personal level.
Do you think you would have been hosting, though, or would it be more producing?
I think I would just be in the background. Well, you know, I'm almost in the background now, but
especially but when trying. We partition you out of here.
I'm like at the curtain, like peeking out.
And you love it there.
I love it.
He loves being a peeper.
I don't know the answer to that. I think because of COVID. So it was because of COVID that I was laid off from my job. And I had this to sort of fall back on. A lot of people think, oh, you guys have this successful show. Yes, it is successful and it's going well. It certainly does not pay our bills. Emily works full time. I have a job that I've been doing for many years that luckily doesn't take very many hours, but covers my finances. So I'm not sure. I think I might have ended up back in a school probably, and I would be getting my ass kicked and coming home with poo in my hair and be exhausted and feeling like there was another outlet for something like this. So,
and just to clarify, not all public schools in Oregon are like that.
Oh no, I'm just saying where I would have ended up, which would have been like a hardcore facility. That's not just school.
Just for listeners who may not know your background story.
I'm also glad to be out of that because I was already burnt out. So in a way, the show saved me as well. Aww. Camilla Turncoat asks how the show has transformed our personal lives and what the next 5 years hold for us, both professionally and personally.
When somebody does an icebreaker at work, it's usually like, tell me something interesting about yourself. I always get the most excitement when I tell them that I do this. People are very curious about podcasting and, you know, what the question we get all the time, what led to us being here. So that's kind of fun. I feel like that. I wouldn't say this is my personality, but it's definitely wound itself into my everyday conversation. It's shocking how many of my dates end up listeners.
Thank God for that. Get on Tinder, girl. Just keep going on dates.
In terms of the next 5 years, I just want to see us continuing doing this and growing. I'd love for this to be a full-time thing or have other shows come out of it as well. I look to that. I hope that that happens.
Josh, how has it transformed your personal life? And what do the next 5 years hold for you personally and professionally?
Well, personally, you and I are getting married at the end of the year.
That's true.
That's a pretty big deal.
Wait a minute. When did this happen? Just kidding. I'm the maid of honor.
Oh, wait. Hello? You're the hair and makeup maiden.
5 years in the future. I'm really hoping, and I'm very excited to see what the results of having the True Crime Fest Northwest up here, the connections we make there. I'm curious to see what that will bloom into. Hopefully yeah. some other creative in Denver's. Speaking of in Denver, yeah. in Denver.
Use code RAIN15 for 85% on.
That's right. Boy.
Probably one of our funniest.
I can't give a straight answer to save my life. And what else? Oh, I hope we can still keep doing this. I would really love to have other shows under the umbrella of Cascade Media. I would love to have a catalog of podcasts that we produce and publish and support.
Yeah.
I guess that's a network, if you will. There we go. That's the word.
I like it.
That's my dream.
What about you, Leash?
Well, yeah, personally, I'm currently living with my future spouse, and that probably wouldn't have happened without the show. So that's pretty cool.
And all I get is a good icebreaker.
Ma'am, with the stories you've been telling, you're doing fine. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I think the show has given me a lot of confidence, which has been cool. I've felt confident in my writing ability and my research ability. When we get those emails saying you used the same research as my thesis, it's like, oh, damn. Okay. I'm doing this the correct way. So on the most personal level, I think that's probably been the biggest growth.
What about the future? What does it hold for us?
That's a good question, because I feel like if anything I've learned in doing the show is to not try to think of what the next 5 years yeah. will bring, because when the show started, when we started in April of 2019, boy, were our aspirations high. And on Thursday, the 11th of March, 2020, we were in the front page portion of the Portland Tribune about the local something. I don't even remember which part of the paper. And the next day, the world shut down. So our trajectory of what we had hoped to see was so different. So it's really hard to say of what I see. But Josh and I are working still on Always Be My Sisters, which has been so much fun and also helped to improve my writing.
And I would say it's that Always Be My Sisters has improved my general health and well-being overall.
Yeah.
It just, yeah, it lifts my spirits. It's really satisfying work. It's totally goofy, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But to people that listen, all four dozen of you, or I don't know how many people are out there.
Yeah, it's a fun escape.
It is.
So
yeah.
That'd be great if that show caught on before we were done with it.
That's how I feel about my Target trips, really.
Lift your spirits.
People don't get it. The way I feel when I walk into Target with my chai in hand.
Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic personalized closet. The styles show up to your door in as little as 2 days. And when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out and choose more styles. Like many of you, my personal style has evolved over the years, but if I want to try something new, sometimes it's hard to know what pieces will work for me. Rather than going to the mall for hours or spending too much money on pieces I might not like, Armoire allows me to rent high-quality designer clothes for any occasion. I can try styles I never considered before without worrying about the store's return policy, like a pair of faux leather pants for my new band. Of course, all of this sounds great, but what's even better is that it's a woman-founded business. You benefit from finding the perfect outfits, all while supporting a business that was built by women just like us. Right now, our listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/murderintherain. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/murderintherain, one word, to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
And our dear favorite fan, CJ, who has supported us by listening, sharing, engaging, being all around awesome from the very beginning, also sent in a question. Has doing the podcast changed how you go about your daily lives? Do you find yourself thinking about things like, maybe I should go do something? Do you find that you have become more observant? So I think she's asking has it changed
yeah.
how we see the world, the lens that of which we see the world. She also asked if we could get a coffee, but she's too far from Nashville. But one day.
One day.
Someday, CJ,
I don't drink
we will have
coffee, but I will get a hot cocoa with you.
She's a slut for hot cocoa.
I really am. Anybody who follows my Instagram knows I did a tour of Australia hot cocoa. And boy, everyone should put that on their bucket list.
Buy her a cocoa.
I can kick this off because I do have an answer here.
Yeah.
Yeah. The answer is absolutely it has. So
yes.
One of the things we've talked about on the show is how our perception of things change. And I have not been shy about talking about in the past, I believed in the death penalty. And now I do not after digging into the cases that we cover and looking at how it varies from state to state. So that's one aspect. But the other is looking at race and politics and true crime and how they all go together. And it's inspired me to be really into DEI. And at work, I joined the DEI committee and I loved education around it. And now I work for a company that is our focus is DEI and improving company workplaces, mainly for women. But when you improve it for women, it improves it for everyone. So it's kind of wound its way into my daily life there and how I look at how life impacts people of different races and really think about, you know, life through their lens. And on my TikTok, it changed how I covered cases. And I was always looking at the number of cases I did for Native American populations and Black Americans. And so I think that was a big one for me. I think it's made me much more aware of my own privilege. Obviously, I know I have that as a white person. I also have that as a blonde female. Like that comes into play too. Like there are just things I didn't understand about life until I started reading people's stories and how hard it is to get media coverage when you're of a certain color in a certain area. And
right.
It's just really frustrating. So we try to use our platform to help with that. And that has wound its way into my everyday life.
That's really cool that it's a positive thing. Because I know for me, and Josh, I'll come back for your answer. When I go for my walk around the block, I have some sort of something in my pocket. If I'm not sure of my surroundings, I'm not going to have my headphones on. If I'm out and about, I'm going to text Josh when I'm leaving and how soon I should
sure.
be home. Not that I live in this paranoid of I left the house and now someone's going to get me. It's not that. It's just we have seen every walk of life doing every mundane activity be affected by something like this.
Alternatively, though, I always had that. And I honestly think it's lessened for me.
Mm.
And that might sound crazy. I'm definitely more vigilant when it comes to dating. I always do background checks on people. I actually canceled a date recently because I learned he had a domestic violence charge. I mean, I don't think I would have done that 5 years ago.
Right.
But I'm just going to keep going through life confident and know that I should avoid certain situations. But I'm not necessarily scared to be a woman in my everyday life,
right.
which is really odd for the stories we cover.
Yeah, and it's not, I think it's the same reason so many women do listen to podcasts. It's one, you've already been exposed to something like that and you're finding comfort in it, or kind of a field guide for being a woman.
Yeah.
Where yeah, it doesn't mean, oh, I heard all these stories and now I can't walk to my car in the parking lot. It's okay, now when I walk to my car at the parking lot, I'll make sure there are cameras and I'll make sure that I'm protected.
Or I will not park in this area. That's I do that naturally. Like I'm not going to park where I know there's no street lights.
Right.
But yeah, I wouldn't say I'm more fearful than I was.
No, not fearful, though. Just educated maybe is
yeah.
the word. What about you, Josh? As a male, I'm interested in your perspective on that.
Like what it's changed about? Like how,
just do you
how
find yourself, have you become more observant in any ways, or has it
come to realize the actual effect that just the presence of a man can kind of just change the temperature of a room,
mm-hmm.
you know, even interactions that we've had at a couple of fests where we're talking to people who are victims or families of victims. There's a very different energy that comes towards me than comes towards you guys.
And that's interesting. We don't have that perspective.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
It's just a thing I can kind of feel in their eyes when you guys are like, because I'm not really like mixing it up with that many people, but like you were talking to, what's her name? Was it Maura Murray's sister?
Oh, yeah, Julie.
There were several times where like you were talking to her or where she would like walk past and there's just like a feeling that I got of like wariness, like a constant wariness of people or something like that, or that sort of
okay.
vigilance that I'm talking about from others towards me. I don't know if it's because of my looks or my size or if I remind people of people or something.
I could be your size. Like you're a tall guy. It can be intimidating for small women, I guess.
Yeah. I guess I've just.
Or just there aren't as many men at these kind of
events. Yeah, that's true. Exactly.
Although when you start talking to someone, I think you can visibly see them relax because you are very kind and easy to talk to.
Thank you.
I'm surprised that you have that perspective because I've never noticed it, but now I will watch for it.
I feel like people have sort of a wait and see attitude or like thought about me to make sure I'm not a fucking. Make sure I'm not a creep.
And I don't know if it's just you. It might be men in general.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think it's me.
I go into a new relationship going, prove me why I shouldn't like you. Whereas if it, and that's with a woman. Now, if it's a man, it might be prove to me why you're worth trusting. So I could see that dynamic.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm not saying anything negative about it. It's just something that I recognize and I can understand why that might happen. And I don't think it's just a perception. If I've noticed it.
And you've been very careful with that. You've had times where you've said, I'm not going to go to that, or I'm not going to go meet with this person for an interview because you just don't want them to feel uncomfortable. You've said, well, they don't need to sit with me right there talking about a rapist, for example.
Exactly.
I've definitely noticed, not that you weren't aware before, but you definitely have a palpable awareness now.
Yeah. I keep distance to hopefully increase people's comfort.
That's very nice of you.
Well, I wasn't saying that to compliment myself.
That's an interesting perspective, though, when it comes to like physical touch, too. Like it is very common for Alicia and I to hug people at events, whereas that's not something you're going to be doing.
Right.
And now that I'm saying it out loud, oh, yes, that's obvious. But I never gave
it's
much
just,
thought
yeah,
to
just,
it.
It's just different. Yeah, it's just different.
Okay.
Was that a good answer?
That was good. So speaking of looking into the future, Linda N. asked, what is a case you are looking forward to covering in an upcoming episode?
Ooh. There is one I've been wanting to cover, but I have a lot of information. So I keep going back and forth, whether it will be an episode, a couple of episodes, or its own show. And I don't want to give away too many details yet in case, because I haven't decided. But I know someone who is convicted of murder. And I would like to tell that story because what's out in the media is very one-sided. I'm not saying I'm defending this person by any means, but there's a lot to it. And I think people would be keen to learn more. So I would love to cover that one, just the personal connection. But it makes it harder. I don't want to hurt people's feelings. I want to get interviews. And it's really uncomfortable for people to talk about that kind of stuff sometimes.
Yeah. How about you, Josh?
Yeah, the case I'm looking forward to is William Gohl, who was called the Ghoul of Gray's Harbor.
Ooh, yes, I know that.
And I think it was in the late 1800s or early 1900s. And he was accused or convicted of killing, I don't know, 100 people or so, sailors, travelers, things like that. Kind of like the H.H. Holmes of Washington, where he would kill people and dump them through a trap door into the waters. But there's a book that came out called The Port of Missing Men that's a reexamination of all of that. And I think it might be suggesting that maybe he wasn't responsible for those deaths.
Oh,
that sounds right up your alley.
Yes, it is. I'm very excited about it.
I am looking forward to an interview, actually. Again, like Emily said, I don't want to go into too much yet in case things change. But I did a True Crime Tuesday about a young woman, a teenager who disappeared from a bus stop, and there was basically no info available. And I was contacted by a family member of her saying, well, here's why there's no info. And it was pretty shocking. And the incident led to that family member becoming a private investigator. So they've got all sorts of information. So I'm just looking forward to getting that information out and learning what really happened to that person. I've got a story that I've been working on that I was originally looking at as a book, but now I'm thinking I just want to do a special under,
well, I think
Murder in the Rain or something.
A limited
series. You have
a
skill with podcasting. I think it makes sense to do it as a podcast.
Yeah.
I feel like your reach can be further these days.
And it's just easier writing. I've been picking away at the writing for so long because I wanted it to sound like a book.
Yeah.
And I don't write like that. I haven't written as a book. I've been writing as a podcaster. So I'm looking forward to that too.
Me too. We can have little spinoff seasons.
That's
I'm really
right.
excited.
Okay, I actually have a question. Ooh. I want to hear from you guys. It's actually a two-parter. So if you have a favorite memory that's separate from the work, maybe from some of our travels or events we've done, and also some of your more memorable cases that you maybe still think about. So let's start with a favorite memory from doing the show.
We were in Orlando last year for CrimeCon.
Yep.
And on the last day there, just the best, I had the best time going to see The Equalizer 3 in the theater.
Oh my gosh.
While you guys were at Universal.
The
or wherever.
Most expensive movie ticket of all time because we got Josh a ticket to Wizarding World.
Someone preemptively bought a bunch of tickets to the.
And it wasn't happening on that day for me after days of being around thousands of people. No way. And it was a great movie.
That's excellent. That's a good memory.
Let's see. I have another one. Recording, maybe my favorite. One of my favorite bloopers is when in the background of an early episode, you can hear through the wall someone taking a bath.
What?
And then we talked about their squeaky cheeks.
Oh, yeah. Those cheeks are always
those cheeks
squeaking.
Are always, and they really were. That's a good memory. Their cheeks were all up in that tub.
I guess my favorite memory is, there are a few. They're usually from events. But I'd say I had a lot of fun at CrimeCon.
Yeah.
Meeting Derek and befriending him was a highlight.
Let's go back to meeting him because that's definitely one of my favorite memories is watching you dork out waving at him in the line at the hotel.
I'm in line to check into the hotel and Alicia's in line to check into the hotel. And we go to very opposite ends. And I happen to go to the one where they usually take the, I don't know, prime members, Diamond Elite.
Oh, she just happened to end up in the VIP
line. No, I just, what they said, hey, I'm open. Come over here. And Alicia's pointing at, she goes, hey, you know, making the eyes at me, pointing behind me. And I do a 360 quick scan and there's Derek from Big Brother and I have my Gatorade and I turn around and I do the most awkward wave of my life. I'm not even, I'm not an awkward person.
If you want to hear full detail of this, we went into it on our Patreon episode.
And then I offered him a Gatorade because he said that was smart thinking. And I'm like, you can have one. And then we continued to talk about Gatorade the entire weekend.
Because you'll definitely have to bring him some in May.
Oh, I absolutely will. But that was a highlight for me because I loved that show. He was my favorite player that season. He's so smart. And I just think what he's doing with his career is really fun. And I hope, you know, we continue to be friends with him.
Yeah.
Also, just being the live shows, the very first one was really
fun.
The
very first live show. Yeah,
that's
one for me.
We didn't know what we were getting into and it worked out so well. And I love being on stage. It's something I've always enjoyed. I have like an anxiety ahead of time, but once I'm there, it feels like home. And that would just solidified what we were doing for me. And I looked forward to many more shows.
I'd have to agree. The first live show was super fun. I mean, both live shows have been great. All the events have been great. Loved CrimeCon, loved the Paranormal Fest. And when I think of some really fun memories, it's not one moment, but our early days recording
in the living room
we all met up in Vancouver. We were in a living room, which is why it sounded like it was in a living room.
Super high ceiling, and 16 feet or something. It's ridiculous.
And we were all still figuring everything out. We were figuring out our relationships, we were figuring out our jobs, we were figuring out writing and getting this done. And some of the bloopers, I literally at Christmas season will listen to the holiday episode bloopers on repeat because they're so funny. Yes, to hear and hear us screaming at Henry, that blooper of Dragnut, just all of that was just a really awesome time. I mean, there's not really been a downtime. We've had some issues through COVID of just mentally keeping it together as individuals, but back then, where that first year of just what the hell are we doing?
The longest recordings possible.
5 hours. It was the whole day. And then you were stuck editing all of that. Oh, my gosh. But yeah, it's really fun to be far away from it now, to be able to really look back and go, oh, those days.
Ramshackle.
Yeah. Some of our best bloopers came from the early days. Truly. There were just so many to choose from.
So speaking of bloopers at the end of our episodes, let's go into episodes. Do you guys have cases? Josh, I know you've been doing your cases for less time, but over the last 5 years, whether your own case or someone else's that you either still think about or people ask about?
Yeah, definitely. For me, there are some I think about daily, and I've talked about this before. Kimberly Kersey is someone I think about regularly, and that was, I think, the first case where I was put in contact with a family member to interview them, and it really opened my eyes to the ethics of true crime and how I wanted to portray our cases. And I think I previous to that didn't shy away from gore very often. And after that had me thinking about that more. And that was an earlier case too, but it really changed things for me. Brooke Wilberger, obviously that was very impressionable to me as a college student. And so covering that case brought all that back up. I think with me, though, most of my cases I think about regularly, especially missing children. Those are hard. But one in a different way that was impressionable and I think about a lot is the Starry Night murder, where I got to interview Jim Redden. That was such a unique experience. We recorded in my old office in downtown Portland. Josh and I went downtown, met him, sat in a room for a few hours. And it was a hard episode because what I had in my brain is I wanted to tell the story and then weave Jim's audio throughout. And it just took weeks to produce that. And I was very happy with the result. I like that episode. We get a lot of good response on that episode, but it was very hard to do. So it was a learning experience for me, but it did pay off, I thought.
Yeah. I think about the Trunks case. We did an update on that the other day, but those four stories, three of which I believe remain unsolved. I do kind of have a twinge of thought every time I see a U-Haul because I covered the history of that story. The Matthew Choi story from A Waking Nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
That one was really bothersome. That was the one where basically he had had a birthday party at his apartment and this guy just broke in and murdered him, like the full absolute nightmare. And then that was the case where we had the gal who wrote us and she had gone on a date with the
right.
guy. And then he ghosted her and she found out he got arrested for murder and she was horrified.
Didn't we talk about that in a previous anniversary
episode? I think
episode?
So, or an update or something.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, that really stays with me. Barbara, the one where the man was just convicted, that stays with me just because I pass that road so many times a week. And just it's hard to not think about how horrible that was. Whitney Heichel stays with me, I think, because that was just one of my very first episodes. And it really was one I wanted to make sure I did right for sure out the gate because it's so local. I had friends that were like, oh, I wanted to listen, but I really couldn't because they were friends with her or part of all of that. I think about Soon Cindy, the woman that was stalked in Canada, and they still don't know if it was murder or suicide. And Path of Pratt, just because that was really upsetting. And I was kind of in that world for a long time. I try to get my research done and really get the work done as kind of as fast as possible in the best way, if that makes sense. I don't like...
You don't want to linger on
it too
long. I don't
like spending too much time with the perpetrator, you know.
Oh, we all run into that. Remember the Wallowing, my episode Wallowing?
Yeah.
One of my favorites to cover only because it was such a shocking case to me. Mm-hmm. And I was always surprised when people said they didn't know it.
Yeah.
But it was hard. It was emotionally hard. I took many breaks writing that episode. I remember asking, is it okay if I maybe do a different episode and then go back to that one? So I dragged that out a little too long, I think, for that exact reason. I learned. I'm like, nope, just go with it and get it done.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot. I mean, I think about Aaron and Buzz and how that kid hasn't been arrested. I think about I think about the dad from Runaway Train who went to prison for killing his son and then wrote me emails and was not cool. And Shane Barton still missing and that how intense that case was and how that went. And, yeah, there's just a lot of them. How about you, Josh?
An old episode that has always stuck with me is, I don't remember what, MIA, about Mia Zapata,
yeah.
The lead singer for the Gits in Seattle that was killed.
Yeah.
The circumstances of her murder and all the potential that she had has just rung around in my head for years. The cases I did about, the episodes I did about Kevin Coe, South Hill rapist, that one stuck with me. That was a lot of research. And I read Jack Olson's book, Son, about that one. And the details in that story have really stayed with me for a very long time. I believe he was the one that was shoving a gloved fist down victim's throats. And so, yeah, things like that really stuck with me. There's what else? Emily's episodes on the Klein Falls axe attack. And the survival story of Terry Gents. Is one that I think about daily. I have the book up on the shelf in our living room and I pass by it all the time. And I see I have all these like little highlighter tabs, you know, all the way throughout it. And I can just look at that and there's hundreds of them. And I can remember almost everything about that book, that experience, and hearing your telling of it.
I am right there with you on that one. I still talk about that with people who might not have heard the episode. Such a shocking case. And it blows my mind that how different each victim's perception on how it should proceed. One just wants to let it go and move on. The other's like, wait a minute here. Let's get justice. And then the fact that the whole town basically knows who did it. And and then they reached out to me.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if we ever talked about that.
That's right.
He desperately wanted me to call him and talk about it and give his side of things. And I'm like, nope, I believe he did it. So I'm going to go ahead and
the alleged perpetrator.
Yes.
Yeah, but it was someone through his
friend. She said, can I give him your number? And I said, no, thank you.
Yeah.
Maybe we should.
I don't, you know, I thought about it, but then I thought, I believe he did that.
He
is violent. I don't want to get involved in that.
Oh, that's true.
It'd be different if I maybe saw his side of it at all, and I do not.
Dick.
That's something that's changed in 5 years that Josh likes to joke about, of just how often I'm engaging with people that either are involved or alleged to have been, or there are questions about. It's like, oh, I just have to go answer this guy's email. He murdered his family member.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of commonplace
now.
Just
a light amount of danger that has entered your life.
I'm constantly removing my information from background checkers.
Oh, yeah. I need to do that.
Yes.
Matt Writing, an incredible friend and florist, asked what he can expect from us at the True Crime Fest Northwest.
Well, it's always a party at our booth. I'll give you that. Come by and say hi. I think, are we doing a live show?
Yes, we're going to have a presentation.
Oh, is it like a panel or are we actually giving a case?
Well, that is undecided.
Okay.
But,
they'll let me know when it comes and I'll do my part.
Yeah, the showrunners will let us know what's happening and we'll either do a panel where we might be discussing a case and doing Q&A, or we might be presenting a case altogether, or we might be pairing up. I know in Denver, there were talks of we might be working with Danielle and Tiffany to present a story. We'll see about that. But yeah, True Crime Fest Northwest and all of the events, because, you know, end of May, we'll be in Nashville for Crime Con.
Heck yeah, I'm bringing cowboy boots.
Oh, boy.
I even got my new jean shorts. It's going to be a great time.
And then July 12th through 14th, we will be in Denver for the True Crime and Paranormal Podcast Festival. You can use the code RAIN15 to get 15% off your tickets. And then Labor Day weekend, we'll be at the True Crime Fest Northwest. So Crime Con, we won't be doing a presentation, but we will have a booth and come by. We'll have all sorts of stuff for sale. Lots of Suck My Balls merch, because that goes fast. People are crazy about it, especially the grandmas.
Well, they don't know any better.
I know.
It's just so pretty.
The magnet-stealing grandmas. And so at True Crime Fest Northwest, it'll be the same. We'll have our table. We'll be doing some booth bitching. Come on by.
And we might. I have a little fun little idea to get your feedback on our upcoming merch. So if you are a listener and you want to have input, make sure you stop by the booth and do a little poll action.
Oh, I like
not that kind of poll action, but like answering a poll question, not dancing on one.
I do believe at both the Paranormal Podcast Festival and the Northwest Fest, we will be hosting our bingo, not hosting, but being presenting.
Oh, yeah.
Our
so
bingo.
You'll get a prize. You go around, you do the bingo, you turn it in, you get entered into a raffle for an awesome prize. With unique merch.
That's right.
Should I wear a big cowboy hat?
Yeah.
Yes.
Obviously. I mean,
one
big.
With dangles like Beyonce.
Yes. Ooh. Fringe.
Oh, yeah. I'll do the fringe across the front. Who is that that does that? Who's that country guy?
He actually just revealed his face. Orville Peck.
Orville Peck. Thank you.
He left the eye mask part, but he took away the face fringe.
And I do not know what you're talking about.
Oh, he's a lovely gay cowboy. I had tickets to his show and then COVID hit and I don't think I got money back and now I can't afford his show. So
thanks, COVID, again.
You know,
is there nothing you won't touch? So yeah, come and see my huge hat
and bring him yogurt and smack his butt and all those other things we've offered up
butt
of him.
Smacking.
Oh, no butt smacking.
A firm handshake at best. Well,
of your butt,
a limp handshake.
Yes, you
at
may
best.
Limply shake my butt with your hand.
That's weird.
Yeah. On a rating 2 out of 10 for shaken and looseness.
Come check out these eggs in a hanky.
Yep. Big old hanky.
That ass has been poured out of a bag.
Like a Canadian milk. Have you guys had milk in Canada?
No, but I've seen, yes, I've seen milk bags okay. in Canada.
I didn't know if that joke was a little too niche.
It works.
It's so worldly. So that concludes our first 5 years, everybody.
Oh, so exciting. Thank
You've
you
done
for
a
listening.
Great job. What is one word you would put toward the next 5 years? You know, at a new year, it's like set your word for the year, for your intention for the year. What's a word you have for the next 5 years?
Blarch.
Perfect.
Exhilarating.
Oh. Expansive.
Ooh.
Mm. Stinky.
What?
You already said a word. I don't think you understand the game.
And with that note, we'll see you in 5 years. Oh, hello.
Sorry. I really love that coconut milk. It's so good.
Okay.
Perfect. You know I'm deaf anyway, so.
Sure do.
Camilla?
Caramello?
Byra Coco shall sit on your face.
Oh, boy. I mean, some people that works.
Cordell! Should be all of your
oh,
boys.
Every boy has a question. Oh, there are a couple that were super into it to the point where I unmatched.
into you being part of the podcast?
Yeah, one would not stop talking about true crime. I'm like, I don't want this to be.
Oh, yeah. All right. We're so much better now.
We have kindergarten next year.
We're going to learn the months in order.
Murder in the Rain is a Cascade Media production, written, hosted, and edited by Josh McCullough, Emily Rowney, and Alicia Holland. Feel free to email us at murderintherain@gmail.com or through our website, murderintherain.com. For as little as $1 a month, you can subscribe on Patreon to get exclusive access to ad-free and older episodes. For only $5, you can access Patreon-exclusive episodes and content. For more of us, be sure to follow on all the socials, listen to Josh and Alicia on their other show, Always Be My Sisters, and follow Emily on TikTok at @M_murderinTheRain. And suck my balls.